Hey everybody, welcome to the Transpose Podcast. I am the fabulous and incredible Robin Allura, and joining me today of my sidekicks is our new sidekick. She's been on twice. We decided, you know what, she hangs around the studio anyway. Why don't we just put her to work? I mean, she works for almost nothing. Robin Jane has joined our cast. Pixie, how are you?
I'm doing great today. Thank you, Robin. And yeah, you know, you got to refresh the sandwiches. The selection sucks.
You know, people don't pay enough on a Patreon. It's all I can afford.
Well, then we got to get some more Patreon in here, don't we?
We will.
So everyone that's listening, make sure, smash that button, follow, and sign up for the Patreon. It's not that much. Come on, people.
It's $5. $5 a month. Most people can afford that.
Most people spend more than that with a cup of coffee.
I mean, hell, I could afford that, but I'm not going to pay myself to do my own damn show.
You already do.
Oh, wait, yeah, I do. Shit. Well, this is going horribly wrong. today, we have a very special guest. Past couple of episodes, we've talked about how important our allies are to those of us in the trans community. And our allies come from all walks of life. They come from even within the LGBTQ community. And some of them, as you're about to find out, are some extremely smart people. I can't speak for Pixie, but I know our guest is definitely smarter than I am. We want to welcome Miss Sarah Beth. Sarah, welcome. Now, you are studying for a PhD. Yes?
Yes. I'm currently, actually on Monday, so tomorrow I'll be starting my very first class for my medical anthropology PhD.
All right. So let's start off by having you tell a little bit about yourself to our listeners.
Okay. I guess we can start off with the demographic checklist, right? I'm a cis woman. I'm asexual. I would consider myself a lesbian, but I've never had a real relationship, so we'll see how that eventually goes. Yeah, I went to SMU for my undergrad. I'm going back there for my graduate school. I graduated with 2 bachelors of science, biochemistry, and mathematics. I would consider myself at least a little bit of a scientist, since it's what I've been doing for the past 4 years. And yeah, that's basically who I am. I've got 2 cats, orange cat named Palpatine. Yes, like from Star Wars, and a black cat named Chekhov. Yes, the Russian playwright.
See,
you've won the podcast right there.
There
just
we go.
With Palpatine.
Just Palpatine. Shit. Well, that's not the Sarah Beth show. I'll see y'all later. No. So yeah, you as our listeners can tell, she is definitely smarter than I am. You said you go to SMU. For those who've listened to the show, you probably have heard the episodes with my wonderful spouse AJ. In fact, AJ is the reason Sarah Beth is here.
Yeah, she connected us, and furthermore, AJ is like the reason I'm gonna be able to pursue this PhD. She's the one who helped me get funding, so that I could actually get into the department and start this year instead of having to take a year off and wait for people to find money for me.
See, she's pretty awesome, and she does that plus her job, plus teaching, and she still has time to run the shit show that is known as the Transpose Twitter account, and does a fantastic job at it. I mean, really, I couldn't do it. I barely can do my own Twitter. Sorry to our listeners. I'm actually drinking. this is Robin Allura's drunken episode. No, kidding. Not really. So you're getting a PhD in medical anthropology.
Yes.
What in the hell is that?
Okay. Yeah. So, let's start with what anthropology is. Anthropology is the study of humans and their cultures, both past and present. I would consider it asking just a few key questions about humans, like, who are people? How do they think about themselves? And what are the material conditions they live in? And if you can answer those questions, you can sort of start to describe a person's culture. And studying that is what anthropology is. Medical anthropology is just a specific application of it. You can consider it a subset of cultural anthropology. For the record, archaeology is just a sub-discipline of anthropology. I don't go digging in the dirt. I'm actually very sad about that because it sounds like a lot of fun, but I don't get to do that. No, instead, what I get to do is study how different cultures define disease and experience disease. So I plan on focusing my study on LGBTQ+ communities and the health problems they face. But not only that, I want to study in particular the kind of healthcare that's made available to them and the quality of that healthcare. Obviously, I can't speak for trans people given that I am not one myself, but I'm fairly sure that doctors not taking you seriously or not listening to you or not giving you access to the kind of care you need is a pretty common experience. I would actually be interested in hearing if you've experienced that, Robbins.
Well, I'm gonna be honest. When it comes to the health care that I have gotten, I consider myself extremely lucky, as I have not had a doctor yet go through the gatekeeping process with me. My primary care physician, when I told him, because I don't know how well you're versed on the wonderful laws of our home state of Texas, but there is a law currently on the books that states doctors can basically drop you as a patient or even deny you care for being LGBTQ. And I went in thinking, exactly, crap, this is what's going to happen. And turned out to be the exact opposite. My primary care went, you do you. And I said, cool, I'm all for that. And turned out I was actually the second trans patient, and I have since sent a couple other family members to see the same primary care physician that are trans, and even I've even sent Eric, my bestie, to him. I don't know if Eric actually did, but Eric is a bi male, bi cisgendered man, and you know, my primary care has been very open. He's worked with me. I've got a great endocrinologist. I think I kind of started it a little differently than a lot of people. I was in therapy for 3 years before I even saw anybody about any of the gender-affirming care, so it worked. 9 years later, I mean, I'm still in therapy, but that's for other reasons. So I think I consider myself lucky, but we see all the time, and I know Pixie can say the same thing, we see all the time in trans Twitter, the gatekeeping, and all that
Absolutely.
Stuff. Absolutely. Now, Pixie is in the Great White North.
Yeah, things are quite different. Like, I sit in the very seat of privilege where I am. Number one, I'm white. Number two, I'm in Canada. And everything, with very few exceptions to do with being trans, is covered in my province. My medication is covered. My gender-affirming surgeries are going to be covered, including the hair removal once I have my consult. So from my standpoint where I am, I have absolutely nothing to complain about. And, you know, really, I feel horrible about it, but at the same time, I'm just like, at least something's going right for me.
Exactly.
And you know, it just makes me more aware of the hardships that more of the fledgling transgender people are facing. And even, you know, the LGBT, excuse me, the alphabet mafia. what we're all facing, whether we're trans or not, through gatekeeping, through medical providers, through all of that, is just, it's enough to make some people just absolutely give up on everything.
It does. And like, yeah. You know, you and I, Pixie, we're very fortunate. However, there are a lot who aren't.
Yeah.
And so I think, understanding those struggles is important, especially for others in the LGBTQ plus community, or as sometimes we call it, Alphabet Mafia, the family. The things that the trans community itself go through, let's be honest, a lot of the other communities don't.
This is true.
And now I will say that does happen. There is this sometimes a little bit of discrimination. And I'm going to tell a story again that we've told four times on the show, but twice by Eric, of him.
It bears repeating
because he had seen the same doctor for years. I mean, I think we're talking 10 years easily. Tried to get a refill on his PrEP treatments. And it after numerous refills, for some reason, it clicked in his doctor's mind that he was LGBTQ+. And his doctor just said, "No, I'm not gonna give it to you no more." And just started treating him like crap.
Wonderful.
Because it's not, it went against that doctor's, I hate this so much, religious code. And we're not going to jump into the religious part of it, otherwise I'd be here all day. If you want to hear my opinions on that, go, get ready for Transposed Unhinged. Yes, that was a shameless plug. So.
We need to.
Yeah. No, nobody needs my opinion on that. So we need more allies. Like yourself, Sarah. So you're studying medical anthropology. I'm going to sidetrack a little bit here. You know, you mentioned archaeology, and I immediately thought, oh, she saw Indiana Jones and thought that was what archaeology was, because that's what I thought archaeology was, and I could just see you running around in the fedora.
Oh, man. I don't like hats. They kind of like, they squeeze your skull. No, I won't deny that archaeology is definitely the sexy side of anthropology, but only if you look at Indiana Jones, because most archaeology is spending 9 hours a day out in the sun, digging through the dirt, hoping that you see like the smallest sliver of pottery, or maybe if you're lucky, a knuckle bone. But of course,
see,
sometimes
Josh
you
Gates,
do make those.
Josh Gates makes it look so much more interesting by finding absolutely nothing. No, sorry, Josh. I know you don't listen to the show, but if you do, I apologize. I love your work. Anyway.
I was just going to say, if you know those Discovery Channel shows where those people go searching for lost hidden treasures and they find absolutely fucking nothing over the course of like 7 seasons?
Yeah, Josh Gates.
If you're an archaeologist, that is a significant portion of your time. Just absolutely nothing. And then you do make a discovery and it's really cool and hopefully you get to like write about it and publish it, but you do spend a lot of time staring at dirt.
You're staring at dirt, doing very little and trying to find all these answers to questions we're not 100% sure anybody wanted to know.
I got to backtrack for just a second there. You know, you're bringing up Indiana Jones, and of course, that's the sexy part of archaeology. I mean, it's Harrison Ford. Come on.
If you go to an archaeologist and you tell them that you think archaeology is really interesting because you loved Indiana Jones as a kid, it will take all of their self-restraint to stop them from murdering you on the spot. So, wouldn't recommend it.
It'd be worth it.
It'd be worth it. I know a couple people I'd like to pay to say, hey, go tell that archaeologist that. Go. Oh, this is going to be great.
Same with paleontology. Don't ask them about dinosaur bones. They don't know about dinosaur bones. They look at human bones. If even bones at all.
Well, they're all rocks anyway. So, medical anthropology is going to let you see how, as a culture, correct, we handle different communities, I guess, would handle things such as different disease, things of those natures. But what I found interesting was something AJ told me was one of the things you were thinking about was actually moving into medicine with a very specialized field? I don't know what you would call it. A specialized specialization. That sounded dumb.
Yeah. I mean, my mom's a doctor. I've wanted to be a doctor for a long time. My mother does not want me to be a doctor. She never told me that outright, but as I got closer and closer to applying to medical school, I started hearing, you know, you don't really have to do this a lot more often than seemed necessary. It's actually like really shitty being a woman doctor these days, even with all the advancements we've made in terms of gender equality. It still really sucks. And she doesn't want that life for me. That's beside the point. I couldn't get into medical school right away because medical school was always the plan. COVID fucked up my application. I didn't have the shadowing hours that I needed to have a competitive application for medical school. So that is on the back burner for now. My scores are great. My grades are excellent. I take great pride in that because I've worked hard for them. So if I do ever want to go to medical school with the experience I have in grad school, of course, it should be very easy for me.
Good.
Fingers crossed.
Good.
But for now, yes, plan PhD first. Specialization. I am looking at a specialization that will allow me to interact with LGBTQ+ patients, not exclusively, but certainly very frequently, because it's beginning to become apparent to me that although a lot of us can just move out of states or countries that are shitty to us, a whole hell of a lot of people can't. And so if I do become a doctor, I want my practice to be targeted to those populations where they can't leave and they need someone within the system to help them navigate it and make the most of it.
See, that is definitely important. I know here in Texas we have that issue. We have a lot of we have a lot right now of anti-trans legislation happening here. It's mostly targeted at kids and teens, but most of us in the trans community, Pixie, you can back me up on this, we know where that's going. You start with those who can't defend themselves and move up the ladder as you get bolder and bolder and bolder. It's gotten to the point where I feel like Texas and Florida are in a race of who can fuck over the trans community faster. Which, by the way, Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis, go fuck yourself. I don't give a shit no more. It's going to be really nice, Greg, when you get to go away.
All I've got to say is eat shit.
Eat shit.
Well said. Eat
well
shit.
Said. But it's important that we have medical professionals that they're not fleeing because we can't flee. You know, with all these bills going through, I see a lot of stories come through my Google news feed, my Yahoo news feed, Twitter. Sometimes I see them on Facebook, but that's only because I log into Facebook like once a month. That are these people in this state with trans kids having to sell everything they own and hope there's a place they can go in a state that isn't actively targeting them. I mean, here in Texas, they are treating gender-affirming care for youth as child abuse.
Right.
You know? And that's been a big deal. I have a particular view on that. I have a particular view on leaving your home for something like that. I completely understand. First off, I understand you have to protect those kids. Kids come first. Okay? You've got to protect them. If that means liquidating everything you own and moving to where it's safe, that's great. But there are a bunch of us here that I feel we got to stand up and say something. We've got to make it so more families don't have to leave. And having medical care for those trans individuals, both adult and youth, is important. It's very important, especially with so many doctors gatekeeping and in a lot of cases, not even listening to us.
Oh, I mean, like, that's kind of touching on the fact that gender and sexuality are heavily medicalized within our society. They're looked at as, if you're not cis and you're not straight, it is a medical condition, almost. And so the fact that being trans, which is purely a social phenomenon, an individual's choice about their own life, is being considered a medical condition that must be managed by a doctor. And if it is managed by a doctor, it's fucking child abuse now, I guess. It's disgusting. It's nothing new. But it's one of those things that we thought we'd gotten past, you know, like the historical conception of the invert back when people didn't understand that gender and sexuality were different. So if you were a man who liked men or a man who acts like a woman, you were called an invert. That was your category. It was considered either a psychological disease or a bodily disease, depending on whom you ask. We got past that. You would think that once we get past that shit, it's all better, but it's not. It's just moved into newer, more specialized terms with highly restrictive categories.
You're right. And I can disagree with one thing of getting past that. We've never gotten past that.
Never moved past it, otherwise it wouldn't be an issue now.
Exactly.
Now, for those of you who are listening to our audience, what you can't see is right now we can see each other, you can't see us, but there's a lot of emphatic nodding and head shaking going on. You can't hear that, but it's happening. We're to the point where we can't say much because this is such a big issue for the community. And let's face it, being in the community, we've said it all. We have said this so many times.
Constantly.
We've never moved past it. And even in our own community say, oh, well, you know, this was all worked out. But no, it wasn't.
It's not been. And the reason is exactly as you pointed out, Sarah Beth, is it's become a medical thing. There is so much misinformation out there. It being trans, and even I know I'm going to catch hell for this, but mark my words, it's going to happen to the rest of the LGBTQ community when it happens to the trans people and they get away with it. Being trans is considered being mentally ill. We have that wonderful bitch MTG to thank for that. Oh, did I say that out loud? I stand by that. We're looked at by these groups of individuals who don't understand us, and worse still, don't even bother to talk to us, to know us, and do nothing but spread how we are sick, how it's a mental illness. Look, I'm not going to lie. I could be classified as having a mental illness, but it isn't being trans. It's all the other shit that comes from my upbringing, which includes textbook narcissism, possible... Oh, well, I'm not going to get into it. I almost psychoanalyzed myself.
We're called deviant sociopaths in some circles.
Yes.
And, I mean, even myself on TikTok, I have people come in and, oh, look, the circus is in town, or look at these deviant sociopaths. Look at these indoctrinators.
Groomers.
God.
All of this stuff. We get this on a daily basis.
I've gotten as far as on Twitter, I've gotten extremely political in my Twitter feed, and I've had people try to flex their muscle, and their only insult is calling me a pedophile.
Right. I was avoiding that one, but yeah, that is a huge one.
You know, that's not what we're doing here. If you ask any trans individual, it's a lot like being any other spectrum of the LGBT, whether it be gay, lesbian, bi, asexual, any of them. We didn't choose to be trans. We chose to stop being miserable and to stop hiding and to actually live life and be happy. Because if we didn't, we'd be a statistic. It happens every day in our community. And medical professionals who don't listen to our community, that can be a huge issue for some people.
Would you like a fun statistic?
Sure. I forget she's a math nerd.
Yeah, no. So I'm unaware if this study has been replicated in recent years, but given some of the research I'm doing right now, I suspect that the numbers have not changed much. But a study done in 2011 of 132 medical schools found that less than 7% of their respondents, 6.8% of respondents had 0 hours of preclinical queer training, and 33% of them had 0 hours of clinical training. That means, as of 2011, one-third of all doctors entering the medical field have had zero experience with LGBTQ plus patients in the clinic, and 6.8% of them have had any lectures on the subject at all.
And that's awful.
It's awful.
That's the ones in Canada. My endocrinologist was the only one so far in the past 3 years that even knew what trans was. I literally had to explain to my last two doctors what being transgender actually meant. Like, I shouldn't have to explain to a medical professional what transgender is.
No, you shouldn't. It's absurd on its face, and yet it's the reality we live in, which is why, like, when you go through the studies, when you look at interviews with patients, one of the most common things you see is the doctor did not know how to talk to me. He didn't know the words to describe who I was and the way he lived. When he went through diagnostic criteria, the doctor made all of these assumptions that don't apply to me whatsoever because he did not understand who I was fundamentally.
Yes.
That happens a lot. And we've even seen, I've talked to a couple people, one I won't name, who their doctor was so uninformed, they actually had to tell the doctor what to do. And that's the thing that the trans community, we've had to do ourselves. We have had to research how to go about this. You know, if you listen to the media, I'm not going to say the media. If you listen to the joke, Fox News, and some of the people who don't like us, they will try to paint us. Hold together, Pixie. They will try to tell the world that if you want to be trans, all you do is go into a doctor and they give you some pills and they get out the Sawzall and ta-da.
God, if only it was that easy.
I wish it was that freaking easy. Are you kidding? I would not have suffered as long as I have if it was that goddamn easy. I mean, shit,
sign
yes.
Me up.
Sign me up.
Sign me up.
You know? It doesn't work that way.
No.
It doesn't work that way at all. And the hardest part is there aren't medical professionals standing up for us because there's a lack of medical professionals who even have a clue what the hell being trans is about. So we have to go through. It's true. We have to go through and do our research. Trans Twitter is a great example because you constantly see, hey, how do I actually take estradiol? My doctor just said, here. I'm writing you the prescription. No idea. I'm going to tell on myself. For the first 6 months, I swallowed the goddamn pills. I didn't dissolve them. They're supposed to be.
We both come from the same person.
Yeah. They're supposed to be dissolved under the tongue. Nobody said anything. My doctor went through with me. Now, I'm not saying my doctor just said, oh, cool, you're trans. Here's pills. No, I had to go through therapy. He had seen I have gone through this. He asked me a huge battery of questions. And then said, you clearly know what you're talking about. You clearly know that this is the decision for you. And has been there monitoring it every step of the way. He's upped my dosage. He's lowered my dosage. He's heard me call him dirty names for lowering my dosage. it's the whole gambit. But we don't have a lot of those doctors. So you see on things like Trans Twitter, people asking, hey, I want to get on progesterone. What the hell can I expect? How do I take it? Am I going to be that crazy, batshit, angry person everybody thinks it says I'm going to be? The answer is probably yes.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, what? We say in the trans community, estrogen is a hell of a drug. Progesterone, that's another level.
That's what's in my birth control. Because, like, fun fact about me. I make way too much goddamn testosterone. We've got no fucking clue why. Trans men want to be me, I guess. So I'm probably on many of the same medicines that y'all are, if you're taking medicines right now.
Yeah.
Simply because that's the best way we have to manage this condition. I get dirty looks at the pharmacy sometimes. And it's so fucking stupid. I walk in. Perhaps TMI. I've got double D breasts. Like, large boobs. Very annoying. Don't recommend. Stop somewhere smaller than that if you have the option. And people will still look at me funny when I'm like, yeah, I'm here for my spironolactone and progesterone. Please hand them over. I need them. It's fucking absurd. Like, again, off topic. You know those crazy people on the internet who believe in Q angles?
Yeah. We know about them.
It's that shit. Like, it's one thing for the people in the pharmacy who don't know better to be like, ew, what's going on here? It's another thing for the fucking pharmacist to not know what's going on.
That's very true. And see, again, I can't speak for a lot of people, but my pharmacist, I lucked out on. And she kind of had an idea of what was to come. When I told her, because I asked a whole bunch of questions, why? Most of the time, that's the only way we know as trans individuals. I asked some questions, and she kind of put two and two together and got five in this case, because it was never going to equal four. And it was like, okay. So when I told her I was going to transition and was just making sure I could get my my medications, or if I'm going to have to switch pharmacies, things like that. Again, pharmacists fall under that state law here in Texas too. If it's against their religious beliefs, they don't have to give you the medication.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. But still, she flat out looked at me and said, we can get you this. We can get you this. They don't let me get in the access to injectables, but everything else I can get, and it's okay. And other than one time being misgendered, they've been great. But not everybody has that same experience. I know
they don't get the same level of care.
No,
they don't.
Nobody does. I mean, I know Steph, our former co-host, she's had issues with people giving her, as AJ would say, people giving her the crusty look. You know, we catch hell. But
yeah,
here's the thing. You mentioned the fact that you produce more testosterone than you should naturally. For me, I was opposite. I produced more estrogen than I should have naturally.
Same here.
Pixie's the same way.
Mind you, I'm intersex. So I quit producing testosterone probably about 20 years ago. It's immeasurable now. I still take Spiro, but my estrogen levels are over 1,600. So I regularly get asked by my GP if there's a chance I could be pregnant a trans woman.
That's both affirming and irritating.
That's another thing I'm talking about. Like, they just, God, it's so frustrating to know that, like, okay, again, I said I'm asexual. I am not sexually active. I will probably never be sexually active. Does not matter how many times I tell my doctor this. He always asks if I'm thinking of becoming pregnant. Sir, I am on birth control.
Yeah.
Please.
This is a non-starter.
Read my chart and use your brain.
Again.
And if it's bad for a cis woman, it's got to be fucking awful for everyone else.
It is. And I want to kind of touch on that a little bit here. A lot of trans women, we have issues with that. We have issues with it because there are, I'm gonna admit this on air, there are a lot of us, myself included, if we could have kids, we would.
Hell yes.
Absolutely,
right
in
now.
A fucking heartbeat. We have seen the experimental procedures happening in Europe, even with cisgendered men. Cisgendered heterosexual men successfully going through a procedure that allowed them to carry to term a child.
Sign me up.
And it would be great. Now. It would be awesome to have that. Now, obviously here in the U.S., fat chance in hell of that happening. But, I mean, for right now, they can't even say who can actually get pregnant. If you ask some of the members of the congressional committee, they can just go fuck themselves. But it can be a huge trigger. It can be a monumental trigger. I know it is for me. And it's been a trigger, and I had a doctor's assistant who was new ask me. I am overweight. I am, like, big time overweight. If you didn't know better, you might assume. But when they ask you that question as a trans woman, it kind of hits you a little different. And when I say a little different, not in a good way.
Not in a good
way. Yeah.
I told you earlier, Robin, that I was feeling dysphoric today.
Yes.
It is precisely for that reason. When I get my cycle, and yes, I do get a cycle, I bloat. And I look like I'm in my second trimester. And I was asked that today when I was due.
And those things can be... When it comes from somebody on the street, it's one thing. You can just go, no, it's okay, ha ha ha. And when they walk off, you can go, I hope you fucking die. But when your medical professional does it, it can hit you like a fucking freight train. And I've had that. Thankfully, my doctor is smart enough to go, I don't need to ask you that question.
Yeah. No, the fact that we've tied womanhood to being pregnant is fucking awful. Not just for trans women, but for cis women as well. Like,
well, for trans men as well.
Trans men.
Literally everyone who could either be pregnant or looks like they could be pregnant. Like, it's bad for everyone. No one's happy when someone asks you, oh, there's my cat. No one's happy when someone asks, oh, are you pregnant? Is your partner pregnant? When's the baby due? Because, like, I also bloat. I don't bloat quite that badly. So I've never had that question before, but it is a constant concern for me. Like, are people going to think I'm pregnant? I see my relatives for the first time in a long while. Are they going to ask me if I have a boyfriend? Are they going to ask me if we're getting married? Those aren't things that I want to do right now, and it's distressing to be asked about them. I can only imagine how distressing it is to be asked about it when it is something you would like, but you just can't right now.
I agree, you know, and yeah. For the trans community, it's one of those things that there are a lot of us that we would, I hate saying these words on air, but I'm going to say them anyway because it's who I am. There are a lot of us who would literally kill to do it.
I've had someone actually offer to donate their uterus to me if there was a transplant program available. And it's a good friend, but it's still... Thanks for the offer. It fucking sucks right now that you're offering it in the current state of the world.
Yeah.
But if it changes in the next 6 months or so, yes.
Absolutely.
Please and thank you.
But it's... When you're asked things like that by medical professionals, I think it guts you in a way that the average jackass doesn't.
It hits different.
It hits different.
You expect your doctor to be on your side, your ally, the one who understands you and your body the most, and they don't. We could chalk that up to incompetence, ignorance, a lack of funding, so they literally don't have time to look at your chart. Whatever it is, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, see, the lack of funding I could see in, say, Pixie's particular situation with being the Canadian healthcare system. But the average doctor, in fact, I'm going to share a piece of advice my doctor once told me was, he said, never trust a doctor that drives a better car than his patient. Because he doesn't exactly care about his patients.
That is
okay.
Solid.
My mom passes the vibe check. We've got Nissan Altimas. That's all we drive.
See? And
there you go.
And it's so when you say something along the lines of funding, yeah, I mean, for most American doctors, let's be honest, it's they're just not reading the chart. And I think that's a lot of doctors who they see so many patients that they don't know who they're talking to till they open the thing, see a name and go, da, 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 da. My doctor, I don't even have to tell him what I'm on. Lips chart. Are you still taking this from this other doctor? Yes. Okay. That's it. Anything he's prescribed, he already knows. He doesn't have to ask me if I'm still taking it. Of course I'm still taking it. He told me to take it. I'm going to take it. Isn't that how medicine is supposed to work? The guy with
You'd
the degree.
Be surprised.
I know. The guy with the degree says, take this. It make you better. Okay. I'll take it and hopefully it makes me better. A lot of cases it doesn't. But having somebody to listen, I think, is very important. And I think you're correct. There aren't enough medical professionals out there who take the time to really study the unique issues LGBTQ as an entire community, the Alphabet Mafia has, with specializations for the trans community. They don't normally do that. There are very few of them. And the biggest thing is listening.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, again, I'm definitely not an authority on this subject. I've only read, you know, a couple of studies, probably less than 20 at this point, on this specific subject. But there is a trend with, like, so you have to take a sexual history, particularly of new patients, right? You need to know who they've been sleeping with, how frequently, how many partners, because that helps you assess what sort of health risks they're at because of their sex life. It's not a judgmental process. It's literally, this is your reality. Let's see what we can do to make sure that you're as healthy as you can be within it. There's been an increase in training towards sexuality-friendly terminology. There has not been that same shift towards gender-friendly terminology. So your provider might know to ask you, are you straight, gay, bisexual, etc.? They might not think to ask you, are you trans?
That's very true. I mean, most of the time we do have to flat out just say it. We do.
Yes.
We do have to say it. And I don't know if you picked up on that, Pixie. She said she is not an authority, but she has read less than 20 studies. How many studies have we read?
But you have the added benefit of you get to live through it, which does make you an authority of sorts.
she called me an authority.
No, see, but in anthropology, that's the kind of thing we look for. We do ethnography. We study a society and the way it functions by looking at the lives of individuals within it, how they interact with that structure and that culture.
20 minutes of studying someone like me and you'll quit.
No, I am an authority on how much salt my body craves. As in, I'm out of a half gallon jar of pickles, so I'm now eating salted pork.
So okay.
My sodium intake has increased. I know that my body needs it. That's what I know. I'm an authority on salt.
I gotta ask, does that mean you're admitting to being a salty bitch on air?
You have met me.